Hey, Roxy.
Hey, James.
How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know why?
Why?
Because Creepy Kingdom has officially launched a Patreon account.
Patreon? What's Patreon?
Well, let me tell you, Patreon is a way that the listeners of the show can support us.
So, like a Kickstarter?
Not exactly. Kickstarter only is a one-time thing. On Patreon, our listeners can support us every month. And in exchange for them supporting us, we will give them special, super awesome prizes.
How much do they have to pay to support us?
They can pay whatever they want. You could pay $1 a month. You could pay $10, $100. It's up to them.
That's really cool. So how can Creepy Kingdom fans find this Patreon thing?
Well, you could go to creepykingdom.com and check the show notes on our recent episodes, or you could go to patreon.com/creepykingdom. That's patreon.com.
I'm going to go check it out right now.
Me too.
Spellcaster Media presents.
And welcome to episode 143 of the Creepy Kingdom podcast, a podcast all about the creepiness of theme parks, films, and beyond. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. Coming up in this episode, we're going to be sharing with you audio from an event that took place this past fall, put on by the Disneyana fan club. It was a tribute to the Haunted Mansion. It was an entire evening full of guest speakers. It was a really fun time. Myself and my producing partner, Ryan, were invited to show an extended clip of Foolish Mortals, so we were very honored to be there. But the granddaddy, most incredible thing of this entire event was there was a panel that included Alan Coates, the son of Disney legend Claude Coates, and Wayne and Lucky Gracie, the sons of Disney legend Yale Gracie. And they told amazing stories about being a kid and getting to see the Haunted Mansion being built, going over to Uncle Walt's house and damaging his car. Absolutely incredible. So I recorded it. Now, this was recorded with my cell phone, so it's not the best sounding audio ever, but these stories are incredible, and a lot of these stories I'd never heard before, especially if you dig deep, you hear a lot of the same stories over and over again, but there's some pretty awesome stuff in there. Also, the panel was moderated by Dennis Tanita, and you also hear some of the two other panelists, Jeff Bam of DoomBuggies.com and author Jim Crocus. After that, I chat with my pal Sarah Bunny as she tells us all about the special hard ticket after hours event that took place at Disneyland called Disneyland After Dark, which was a throwback to vintage Disneyland. You know, only a certain amount of tickets were sold, so not a lot of people got to go, but she did, and she tells us all about it. Real quick note before we get things rolling. It's that time of year again where you get to vote for the top creepiest film of 2017 now. We like to time this up with the Oscars, so, you know, voting is open. You could do so by going to creepykingdom.com and find the link on the homepage or check out any of our social media accounts. Voting is open until February 20th. So get your votes in. So now, without any further ado, let's begin.
Everyone had to work together, as everyone always does in Imagineering, to try to make it come together, and it did very well. And Dad did what he did best, was given the mood and the lighting and more of the scariness at the beginning of the ride, and Mark's characters in the graveyard scenes and the funnier stuff came along later on. So, like during the Pirates, Walt was putting people together that had very different sensibilities and artistic ways of working. And Dad and Mark, they worked it out. And they were never really combative, no. But what they did, it just worked and it came together. And then, because of the influence of Rowling and Yale and X coming into that mixture, it all finally came together with all these people saying, here's a good story too. They said, well, Sharon, they brought Sharon Disney Lund over to take the ride. And they said, Sharon, we want you to take the ride. And your father's gone, but what do you think about Haunted Mansion? So Sharon goes through the mansion, right? And Dad, Mark, Yale, and all these guys are waiting for Sharon to come out. And Sharon comes out. And they said, well, what'd you think? What was your impression? She says, well, I liked it. But I was just thinking about Dad up there looking down and thinking about all the things you guys didn't get right.
Did you think that with X involved, he kind of was the glue that tied the disparate parts together?
That was true. And Tony's also said Rowling kind of helped tie everybody together too, because it had to be these other influences to bring Claude and Mark's different approaches together. And so it was Rowling and X who wrote the script and of course the song. And one other quick story about that song, and my wife has the press release, if anyone wants to see it, this is true. The original title of the song, there was another title. Does anyone know what the actual title of the Haunted Mansion song is? He knows. All right. You're right. It was the Screaming Song. Grim, Grinning Ghosts Come Out to Socialize was a lyric, but it wasn't the title of the song. It was called The Screaming. How did you know that, Jeff? The Screaming Song. You're right. That's what it was called originally. And what's interesting about, like, to make it very clear what you're saying, I talked to Tony too about your dad, and your dad's his mentor. He said, if you look, you go past the mansion, you look at what Mark did. He did things like Country Bears, America Sings. Like, there's no, the atmosphere is a theater, and you're watching the characters, right? And then, but then you go and see what, like, you've got Wings, like, very atmospheric and, you know, a mood setting. So he just said you can see what Walt could manage to do that no one else could. You could be putting things together to make it merge. And so, you know, when you get past that, then you just see the various strengths shine differently, right? I just think that's interesting because it's very clear.
So, Alan, what did your dad think about the attraction lesson? Did he think it was clearly his work and Mark's work separated, or did he feel it came together as a...
Dad was such a team player and so modest, he would never say, I think this is my show, or I think I did this, or I did that. He thought it worked fine, as far as I know. His favorite show of all was The Pirates of the Caribbean. That'll always be his favorite. But I think he thought everyone came together pretty well, considering that Walt wasn't there. Even though these guys were so smart and so creative, they had to have Walt there to guide them along and be the final decision maker, and he wasn't there. So I think Dad was very pleased with the way things finally came about.
How about on the racing scene? have any impressions of your father's feelings about the attraction once it opened?
I think, like Alan said, it was all a team, and I think my dad actually, and maybe Alan's dad, wished it was a little scarier, and they had to downplay it a bit just because some of the stories went, it was too scary to begin with, and it didn't really work with actually riding through, and some of the gags would have been better with the walkthrough. But yeah, it was a team. Team result, and I think they all work great together, and that's kind of why we're still here as descendants of the great team.
Did you feel that the effects that he had worked on, the illusions, came off as you thought they would, or?
I think so. There were some that were supposed to be a bit different, and I really wasn't totally involved in knowing what those were supposed to be, and he was kind of quiet when he came home. He didn't really talk about that. You know, it was his work, and it was my dad, and that's what they did. But I think in general, he was happy with the way that it all came together with the people who were involved.
Did he tinker around the house?
Oh yeah, he tinkered all the time. He would fix anything. My mom would just say something was broken, and he'd say, "No, I'm gonna fix it." And you take it into a shop, fix it. There was always things going on in the shop, always working on some new little project and fixing something, tinkering something. A lot of light, different lighting things we had at our house. He shined some little teeny light a half a mile away up on the back of our hill. We never figured out how he did it. But colored lights before they were popular, just all sorts of kind of lighting things. And so it was always kind of fun in that respect.
Was he always interested in magic or things of that sort?
Well, I think he did magic when he was younger. He actually, that was one of his hobbies he enjoyed doing. I think as time went on, I think this Disney thing really changed his look or in the Imagineering section. Because he really could make things different than they were. A lot of the times I ended up breaking my toys just to see if they could fix them. Actually, one quick story. I don't know if anyone remembers, but there used to be an airplane that would go around your head with a propeller window, and he would hold on to the battery pack. Well, the first day I had it, probably broke it. He'd always say to us, he'd go, "Hey, put it on my desk, we'll see if we can fix it." Well, anything he put on his desk, it would come back like 10 times better. Almost like the plane wanted to fly itself. But the interesting thing he did, he actually made it so it hooked onto the windshield of our car, like a side windshield. And they could play with the remote, and the thing would go up and down. And you can imagine the little kids that drove by us, smashing their face, go, "Dad, I gotta get that," you know? So he did make things completely different than what they started out to be.
I know, Alan, you work with Gale, especially on the unadaption and Forbes.
Yes, I did. Yale was my mentor. Yale and Bud Martin showed me how to be an Imagineer in lighting and illusions and special effects. And it's funny because I knew Yale most of my life. I think it was mentioned earlier. He took my baby pictures. And then 20 some years later, I was working with him. And he looked just the same, I think. So, what was the question now?
Some memories of working with you.
In Florida, I worked shoulder to shoulder with Yale on the Florida mansion, which was very much the same. In fact, isn't it true that they actually built two versions, yes, basically? The only difference in Florida was the elevator didn't go down, because in Florida you go right into the water and the ceiling went up. So the stretching was reversed in Florida. And there was a library room in Florida and some other elements that were a little bit different, but I did work with Yale. And I remember walking down the portrait corridor with Yale and just admiring the simple effects, like those faces, those eyes that would follow you, and those busts. And I was as enjoyed it as much as anybody, how he created these effects. I said, "This is really cool. And I'm here with this guy that did this stuff." So,
fire thing
The fire thing didn't go good with me. That was my first job. Yale told me when I first went to work for Wed, he gave me a little test. He said, "Take fire," meaning like burning embers in a pyre. And I knew how it was done, but I just couldn't do it. Your father tinkered all this stuff together. I wasn't a tinkerer kind of a person. I couldn't make it work. So 45 minutes later, he comes up, puffing on his pipe, and looks down and shakes his head, and I go, "Well, I had the shortest imaginary career in history. I'm out the door." But Glenn Martin, most of you probably don't know him, a great guy, he's a really good lighting guy. He said, "Alan, come on, let's go out. We're going to light some models. Come on, let's go." He saved me from your father. After that, it was okay. Working with Yale was wonderful. And I was as impressed with his illusions than anybody else. I just thought he was wonderful.
The amazing thing with what Yale did is he used very simple tools to get these amazing effects that people thought were much more technological than they were.
Yeah. So without computers. No computers back then. I mean, the one computer I remember seeing at Webb, it was an entire room. It was a huge room. You walk in, and it was just wall-to-wall, big computer. That was it. But I don't think they even used that for the Imagineering. But it was all, you know, they just did it with their hands and with things that they knew how to do. And the Blood Mechanic was a good book. In fact, I have my dad's book, The Blood Mechanic, page 52. And, you know, he's got a lot of things out of that and just took from that and grew from that and added to it. And it's amazing. I have a book, and Alan has one I'm going to end up with, but a handwritten book of all of these, of his, not all of his things, but many of his designs of how to do a certain thing. And he would sign his name, put a date on it, and just pencil, how something was going to work. Not all of them were used with Disney, but they were just designs for something he came up with in his head and decided to write it down in a notebook, and there it is. And maybe sometime we'll publish that and share it. But it was fun.
Now, do you know the illusions that were used in the attraction, were they part of the walkthrough originally? Maybe the story is in.
Go ahead. Well, I mean, the general idea of Pembroke Fells, right?
The illusions evolve, because with a walkthrough you have more time to see this. When you're doing a ride through, it's got to be a snapshot. And so, yes, some of the illusions were used, but they were sort of shortened and edited, so that they could be seen clearly. And Claude's father designed the Florida one, so that it looks like a creature coming to get you, those outstretched arms for that. Did your dad do magic tricks for you when you were kids?
Oh, he always did magic tricks. And,
like what? What kind of magic?
Just, he did amazing things just with a napkin and at the table, dinner table, and he would just you'd make something appear, or make a little figure out of a napkin, you know, and it was pretty funny. And you know, he could whip out a Donald Duck or Mickey Mouse cartoon figure on a napkin and go out to dinner and whip it out, you know. And, so he's a good animator as well. He started out as animation, of course, everyone knows. And he had Mickey and Donald Duck really well. But he was really into magic, and unfortunately, he inherited his box of magic tricks. No instructions on how to use it. Incredibly detailed little pieces of magic tricks. If some magician took it, they probably figured it out, but you have this box of no instructions for magic tricks. We don't know how to use them, but he did have a lot of magic tricks.
So let's talk about a couple more personalities that worked on the attraction. Existencia. J.R. or Jeff?
Yeah, what we did with Gracie's and the coach, they're always going to have us. Existencio?
Only know the name so much, not really his interaction, you know, on a personal level. My dad, I know, and was part of the team.
Well, who came over to your house to play when you were young? From Disney?
Walt. Nobody went to Walt.
house in Palm Springs and had a few good times down there with him.
Did you ride horses down there in Palm Springs?
Rode horses down there, right, in his golf cart. It said Led on the front. And we so just tried to drive that around.
You show his kids, what was your impression of golf?
You know, we didn't really...
Sure.
He was actually a very nice man. He's very quiet. I mean, not so quiet, but he'd always be dreaming about something. And we'd spend some time having dinner with him at his house down there. And he'd always writing or drawing something on a napkin and passing it around the table. But what do you think about this? And that was actually when before Florida was around. So some of the things he was doing was about Florida. One thing my brother didn't tell you is he broke off Walt's side door on his car. Or maybe we get up.
Well, what's the story, Lucky?
We wanted to skateboard in the garage, which was really smooth. So I ended up, I was pushing the car back, and he was driving it back. We forgot to close the door. So when they hit the side wall of the garage door, just busted it all the way back. Literally, you know, it wasn't very quiet. It made a lot of noise. So it ended up, all these people came out. You know, Walt's there, my parents. My mom always goes, "What the hell?" Yeah, with the sound on, that was it. Anyways, so one of the men there offered to pay for it, but we had the consequences that we had to stand against the wall to pay it off in so much time, so we'd have good posture. I don't know if it worked. That was one of the things we remember. Oh, also, one time we were there, it was Christmas time. Ended up asking all of us, "Where is your Christmas tree?" And Walt Disney not having a Christmas tree is kind of strange, but he sent us out and he told us to go get some tumbleweeds. And we brought these tumbleweeds back and configured them into a tree and decorated and turned on the lights. And it was like amazing tree out of tumbleweeds. So.
Remember the Christmas parties at the studio? And in the theater? Walt loved the kids. And he put on the most incredible Christmas party every Christmas in the studio theater. And then give us, they call them swag bags, you know, I guess, and goodie bags. He just—I think he knew every kid, every employee, and we were really fortunate. Disney brats, as we called ourselves, we grew up there in that beautiful place all those years ago.
This episode of Creepy Kingdom has been brought to you by League of Shadows. This is an Etsy shop that specializes in paranormal and creepy-inspired jewelry, including a Haunted Mansion Parasol Girl necklace. Just go to Etsy.com/shop/League of Shadows. That's Etsy.com/shop/League of Shadows.
I interviewed Al, and this is the first time Al and I have met in person, face to face. We're both disappointed. But I interviewed him extensively for a book series called Walt's People. And so not only was Alan Claude's son, but he worked in Imagineering. And so this interview goes on for like about 25, 30 pages. One of the
78 pages.
One of the best interviews I have ever read in my entire life. And we still didn't cover everything. Even tonight, he's sharing things. And this really irritates me about people I interview, is they come up with these stories that they never told me when I was. So look for Walt's People and a wonderful interview. And I hope one of these days to interview Wayne and Lucky, because I think they have some more stories. In the bathroom, we were talking about how Yale was an outstanding photographer and apparently did photos for national magazines. No, not just yet. We need a story here.
No, this was in his spare time, but he did magazine covers for Alaska Sportsman. Some of those were actually paintings or drawings, watercolors, and then he did some advertising for Ford Times. and he did various Christmas, he always was designing Christmas cards, family Christmas cards for us, painting Christmas cards, and his photographs, yeah, we still have a lot of his photographs, and he just loved photographing as well. Mostly black and white photographs.
Jeff and I were talking, we've got to track these down. These even existed.
Yeah, they did.
Well, I know we're running short on time, so we're going to try to close this here. But I kind of prepped these guys with one last question. I'm kind of stealing this from Chris Matthews on TV. He ends his show by asking, tell me something I don't know. So we're going to go around and close it by asking each of you, tell me something I don't know about the Haunted Mansion or your dad's.
Disneyland. As I said earlier, I toured Disneyland a lot because I lived at Disneyland Hotel for a long time. When my dad was working on other things here, but I used to take the monorail in, as early as I thought it went, when usually the public went. But I found out at 7 o'clock, all the people who work there have one monorail that they take. So I decided to get on there. No one said anything. The only child on this 12 years old child on this thing. But when I got to the to Disneyland, they used to do, and I don't know if they do this anymore, but there's a ribbon cutting ceremony every morning, ribbon cutting ceremony. So once I got there at 7, I watched it. They picked someone from the audience to cut the ribbon. And when they cut the ribbon, all the people would run to the rides. So I'm like, oh, that's kind of neat. Let's try that. So I went up to the man and said, hey, can I cut the ribbon? Ended up, yeah, sure, son, take it. So I ended up cutting the ribbon, everyone's trampling over me. But I showed up at 7 o'clock at the monorail again, got over to the park and asked the gentleman again, can I cut the ribbon? He's kind of looking at me, 12 years old, no one else around, this guy wants to cut the ribbon. Anyways, I did it 3 times in a row. Finally told me, I'm sorry, the guy, I don't know where you come from. That's it. So, again, I used to know Disneyland really well. There was times that no one ever asked me. I would go around, going upstairs and down in hallways, and just searching around just to see what was there. It was really fun. It was a great memory of Disneyland and all the people who worked there, too, as well.
Well, here's a great Claude Coates Imagineering lesson. When they were doing the final dressing of the set in the grand ballroom on the big table, what's that, about 8, 10 feet long? And they sent somebody out to get a tablecloth, and this set decorator came back with this beautiful lace tablecloth. It must have cost the company a fortune. It's actually beautiful. And he laid it out on the table, and he was so proud of this lace tablecloth in the grand ballroom. Dad said, no, that's not going to work. And he went and got a pair of scissors, and he started cutting, distressing, destroying this beautiful lace tablecloth. And this man just, oh, my God. And then Dad got his hands dirty on the floor and started with this. Go slip here. Things don't look like that. This is called thieving. It needs to look like it belongs here. And the guy didn't get it. And this happens often. Tony's told these stories, and this happened to me too, where people don't seem to get the concept of the bigger picture. So Dad, you can see pictures in Jason Sorrell's book of Dad's chopping with the scissors all around this beautiful tablecloth. That's Dad's work directly, distressing the tablecloth in the grand ballroom.
Okay, Wayne?
Okay, well, since we're showing heads tonight, I brought the little friend with us here. This guy here was supposed to be the Hatbox Ghost originally. And the story is that it was way too scary. And so that got thrown away, and somehow we ended up with it, and they went with the Hatbox Ghost, which is not quite as scary as this at all. And so this is what we have.
You know that's in press photos, right? That head.
Without holding it.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So maybe you can store it.
Sorry. No.
Some people don't out there, right?
I'm just an amazed.
No, that's my story. I'm sticking to it.
I'm not wearing underwear. No, I don't wear underwear when I write the Haunted Mansion. No, Mark Davis was a friend, and I interviewed him many times when I was in Florida. One of the times he said, you know the graveyard scene in the Haunted Mansion out here in Florida? And I said, well, yes, I've done it many times. And he said, well, you know what? We have that... opera singer. There's a female opera singer. She's a little overweight. She's got the pigtails. She's in the armor, and she's wearing the sort of the Viking helmet and all that. And he says, well, you know why she's in there? And I had no clue. But my dad always told me, it's okay to be stupid for 5 minutes if you're a hero for the rest of your life. So I said, well, because you wanted a variety of different characters. He said, it's because she's the last ghost on the right there. It's not over until the fat lady sings. There you go. Something we don't know.
Yeah, that's something we don't know. Something no one knows. Many people don't know. My favorite attraction is actually Adventure Theater Space. Believe it or not. And but although about the Haunted Mansion, something that I just have been learning more about, I guess, is that we're always trying to look back. How far back does the Haunted Mansion go in history? That Harper Goff picture. I mean that's a haunted house. I don't know, but that big map that Walt and Herb Ryman spent a weekend creating in 1953. Was it? That has a haunted house on the end of Main Street. And people kind of thought it, but when one of them went on auction recently this last summer, a copy of that map, you go up and really look up close, and I went visited and looked up close, you can see clear as day the haunted house there on the end of Main Street. So just a little more pursuit of the facts.
So there you have it. We could probably go on for hours and hours here. We thank you all for joining us. Hope you enjoyed the
All right, so I'm here with reluctant podcast contributor Sarah Bunny.
Hi.
Reluctant because I always just force her to be on the show and just start talking to her about stuff. But we're going to talk about a hard ticket event Disneyland just had. Not that many people went, but you're one of the few people that I know that went, which was the Disneyland After Dark event, which was hard ticket. Well, I've never seen so many kids eager to run inside Tarzan's treehouse before.
Oh, yeah.
It's all uphill.
All that monkey business.
Well, obviously, we're in Disneyland right now. Anyway, so... it's hard ticket event. And it was a throwback to, 1955 Disneyland, where I encouraged everyone to dress in vintage attire. Very similar to Dapper Day.
Very, very.
And that's all I really know about it. So so why don't you tell me what other offerings they had there?
Yeah, they had food there.
Food?
Yes, food.
They had vintage food?
Kinda. I mean, they didn't have anything in gelatin. But, that's very 50s, 60s.
No
housewife.
Jello molds.
Yeah, no jello molds. But they had Kahlua pork. They had some other stuff.
Did you eat any of this vintage food?
No, because the lines were ridiculous, for one. For everything that was kind of neat, they had some photo ops. One was the back of a car where couples were cutely posing with each other, because it was date night still.
Oh, okay.
And then you could be in the bucket, the sky bucket. They brought one out from storage.
Oh, you can pretend that you were...
One of my favorite rides that I miss so much.
Yeah, I think they banned those like all over the country.
No, Great America.
Oh, really?
Still has them,
still
yeah.
Got them going.
It's the best ride to play Pokemon Go on. Well, it goes really slow.
Oh, so you could
and you're like...
They're up in the air?
Just riding for a while. Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, whatever.
Right.
And then... There was, on the riverboat, there was, a four-piece band that was playing.
Oh, yeah?
Like, old swingy time music.
They allow you to dance on the boat?
Yeah, they wanted you to dance on the boat.
Wow.
But that line was ridiculous, too. But for the most part, I walked
Hey, guys,
down.
What are we talking about, huh? Huh?
Wow, just
something you didn't do.
What a crash. The segment.
Hi, it's Roxy, the evil queen of the Creepy Kingdom, totally crashing this segment. Just so you know, I just want to say hi. Hi, guys.
Yep, that's Roxy.
That was Roxy. Anyway, so...
The lines were really short for everything else, though.
For the rides?
The rides, oh, yeah. Just walk on.
See, they kind of pitched it as you walk back in time, and I was hoping that there'd be a lot more, like, old-school looking characters. I mean, that's...
Not really. They were the modern characters, but Minnie, Mickey, and Goofy all had, like, old-timey-ish costumes on.
Oh, they were wearing costumes.
Yeah.
I was really hoping that it would be, like, the costumes from 1955. Like
right?
That.
The creepy ones?
Yeah.
I was looking forward to that, too.
That might have been worth the price of admission for me. But,
yes. I was hoping for that.
But they didn't do that, huh? They just pretended that they were dressed in 1950s attire. That's,
yeah. I Minnie had a poodle skirt and a, you know. But, yeah, it was just those three that had costumes. Mickey was Zorro.
Yeah, I saw that picture online. I was like, that was pretty cool. I've never seen that before, ever.
Yeah.
I think that was new. I don't know. I'm not an expert on Mickey dressing up as Zorro, but I've never seen that before.
They had a few more characters wandering around, but they were just wandering around like the old days, where you just stumble across them.
No handlers,
park.
Huh?
No handlers, just walking around, you know.
What was the crowds level like? It sold out, but what are they
counting? Oh, it finally did sell out?
Yeah, I saw it sold out. But
that's good.
But what was it at? Like, did it feel sold out?
No, not really. I mean, people were just pretty much in the lines for the photo ops.
So basically, did it feel like it was closed and you could just walk on anything?
Pretty much. I mean, stuff were like 10 to 20 minute waits.
And now what were the hours of this?
It was from 8 to 1 o'clock. But you could come in at 6. Yeah, with your ticket.
Okay.
Yeah, it's 2 hours. Yeah.
It's a lot similar to the Halloween parties and stuff like that. It's interesting because it seems like they kind of made like a private hard ticket Dapper Day.
Yep. Yes, they did. Got to cash in on that Dapper Day.
So I'm curious to see if they'll take any other themed days and make it a private event.
Their own Bats Day coming soon.
Their own Bats Day. That's obviously what I what I would be hoping for.
Something dark.
But yeah, it sounds cool. I wish it was. Well, they were really vague on what was going to be there. That's why I was like,
yeah.
I wasn't going to drop the money for it because I think it was like $100 to get in, right?
Yeah, it was like $95.
Yeah, so I don't know if there was a discount with the AP or whatever, but
no, there was no discount.
No, well, there you go.
So
you know, I was like, but like I said, I wish they would really make advantage. You got the old school creepy characters.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else, but
the fireworks were good.
So it was an old school fireworks show, is that?
Yeah, there was the original fireworks show from 1955 that they did, their big spectacular fireworks show they presented that night. And I was actually pretty impressed. I thought, you know, it would be super small because it was very expensive and no one did it.
Right.
But no, it was actually very impressive.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I guess.
It was decent.
Well, at least that was worth it for you. We'll see where these things go. They have more events like this, or
yeah,
it's gonna come to it. I don't know. Would you go to it again?
Maybe. It depends on when it is. I mean.
But you had a great time? You enjoyed it?
Oh, yeah, I had a fun time. Cool. Seemed like less people here. I was just able to wander around. And that's really what I like to do at Disney, since I've been here so much that, you know, you just cruise around like it's your home. I'm sure you know that. As we stand in front of your other home, the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah, we're just casually rambling. Yeah, no, as, you know, when you go a lot, even when you're not a local, but when you go a lot, you like to, you know, explore the, you know, the details. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, just
the
take it in.
And take it all in.
Because it has magic.
Not so, you know, like, well, like when I go to Florida, it's very agenda driven.
Right?
It's like boot camp, you know. Yes. So.
Yeah, there they have the stuff. Here is the magic. Right. Here at Disneyland is the magic.
Well, you know, it's for whoever gets, for Florida locals would probably be the opposite, you know. It's whoever gets to go, whatever. But anyways, I just wanted to talk to you firsthand about this. I was curious to see what exactly was going on there. So
yeah, it was pretty fun. I like to see where it goes from there.
Alrighty. And thanks for sending in your pictures that we posted on our social media. People were... That's the other thing. People were commenting on the picture saying they had no idea that this was taking place.
Yeah, they kind of, you know, let people know it was happening, but not at the same time. And I guess it didn't, you know, word didn't get out all that much.
Even though it sold out, which is...
Yeah, well, it took till, like, really close to the day to sell out, though.
Yeah, I think it sold out. I saw two signs online. One said tickets still available. Then I saw the sold out sign.
Yeah. So I mean, it sold out while I was there. The day. So it was popular. But yeah, a lot of people that were there also were saying that they learned about it from the hotel because they were staying at the Disney Hotel.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So they're pushing it to resort
guests. People that were staying there, yeah. Hmm. So they're like, oh, we didn't even know about this thing. I'm like, okay.
Now, how strict was the dress code enforced?
Wasn't enforced. It was a special ticketed event, so they treated it like normal costumes.
Oh, okay.
The normal costume rules. Right, and they put those up, that, you know, nothing long that can touch the ground. And, but, I mean, besides that, or masks.
No toy...
Yeah, toy weapons.
Machine guns. Those 50s vintage toy machines.
Yeah, gee. No, I think those were earlier. 40s.
Yeah. Yeah, all right. Yeah, they should do that night. When's, I know it wasn't open yet, but when's 40s night?
Yeah. <after dark. laughs>
Whatever, do a little Dick Tracy cosplay.
Yes.
All right, well, thanks for your reporting.
You're welcome. You are more than welcome.
If you'd like to contact us here at the Creepy Kingdom podcast program, you can send us an electronic email. And that electronic email address is creepykingdom@gmail.com. And for show notes, links to all of our social media, videos, check out our articles, theme park news, all that fun stuff. Vote for the top creepiest film of 2017. It's creepykingdom.com. Well, until next time,
keep it creepy.
I have to go now. It's midnight.
Pleasant dreams.
This episode of Creepy Kingdom has been brought to you by Olivia Frankenstein. Olivia Frankenstein is an Etsy store that specializes in creepy-inspired enamel pins, buttons, t-shirt, patches, posters, bags, and much more, including their original design, Spooky Mouse Club, a must-have for every Creepy Kingdom citizen. You can check out that design and much more by going to oliviafrankenstein.patternbyetsy.com. That's oliviafrankenstein.patternbyetsy.com.